3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
All right, welcome to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill with you. Thanks for being here. We've got a big one in store today. A big one in store today. First, we're going to recap the game from yesterday. Wow. Good to finally get one against the Blue Jays in what has been a tough series in a tough road trip, but a game they had to absolutely get, and they did. So we're going to go through that in just a moment. We'll get Lloyd McClendon's reaction to it as well. Taijuan Walker, of course, the day before was simply sensational. We're going to hear from Taijuan Walker coming up. We're also hear from the skipper of the Blue Jays, John Gibbons, his comments on Taijuan Walker, pretty mind-blowing. You're going to hear that coming up as well. Lomo, a giant day for the Mariners yesterday, a couple of home runs. We're going to hear from a guy who partly responsible for Lomo being where he is at this moment in the big leagues. And we're going to have that conversation coming up, which is outstanding. I have a piece of audio to play for you. And I cannot wait to get your thoughts on this, because we're going to break down the scenario. It's simple math at this point, what the Mariners are looking at to catch the A's. A's are the target, and there's not much margin for error. In fact, I want you to think about, sit there and think about the percentage you give the Mariners to pull this off. I want you to put a percentage on it as you sit here right now. Then I'm going to play a piece of audio for you and see if that nudges your percentage just a little bit. So that comes up in a few minutes as well. I'm very curious to get your take on that. I hope you email me after the fact too, or tweet me, because I'm very curious to get your thoughts. But that comes up in a few minutes. Right now, let's get to the ball game, and a game where the Mariners just desperately needed, after what has been such a rough series against the Blue Jays all the way around. If it wasn't the pitching in the first couple games, it was the offense in the third game when Walker was on the mound. This one was all bullpen. Johnny Allstaff, baby. Tom Wilhelmsen getting the start, and he gave up a couple of runs early. The Blue Jays an early lead, 2-0 in the ball game. But in the fourth inning, Kyle Seager coming through in a big, big way for the Mariners.
1-1 pitch. Swing and a line drive into left center field. That's going to drop in. A base hit. Taylor running third. He'll score. The throw to third is going to be cut off by the shortstop Goins. The throw from Ghosts, the center fielder. So the Mariners indeed get on the board here in the top of the fourth inning. Kyle Seager with an RBI single.
RBI single for Kyle Seager. He wasn't done there. 96 RBIs on the season now for Seager. That is just one off Donaldson for most in baseball for third baseman this year. And, you know, you start to break down the numbers. I'll get, I think, more into this in detail. But, I mean, you look at the numbers, there's a case to be made that he's having the best season for any third baseman in baseball. You can make that case. You really can. Home runs. He's got 25 on the season. That's third most for any third baseman. Donaldson has 28. Frazier from Cincinnati has 28. Seager's got 25. Ribbies, I just mentioned, he's second behind Donaldson, just one off the pace. Batting average, and this is a big difference between Seager and Donaldson. Seager batting 271, that's 11th best above third baseman. But Donaldson 20th best at 252. Pretty big difference in that regard. Slugging percentage, Seager is third at 461. OPS, he's up there as well. Seager's third at 798. 27 doubles on the year. I mean, you look at all the different numbers, and I think there's a case to be made for a few different guys. Donaldson is up there as well, but his batting average really drags him down. On base percentage of 341. Beltre's slash lines are outstanding, but 145 games. He's missed some time. His counting numbers aren't quite where Seager and Donaldson and other guys are. 19 homers, 76 RBIs, and all three have played stellar defense this year. But, man, third base power resides in the AL West. But there's a case to be made. Who knows? Three more games to be played. We'll see if that makes a difference. But pretty remarkable. Remarkable season for Kyle Seager, no matter what. But that just goes to show what he has done. One of the best, if not the best, certainly one of the best players at his position. And then after that, Logan Morrison steps up, and he cashes in on a huge, huge bomb.
The pitch from Redmond, swinging a drive deep into the gap in right center field. Ghost going back to the warning track near the wall. Goodbye, baseball. Logan Morrison with his 10th home run of the season. A three-run drive, and it's now the Mariners 4 and the Blue Jays 2, and the Mariners take the lead here in the top half of the fourth inning.
Boy, did they need that, and he crushed it. 423 feet. He is just continues to hit big home runs down the stretch. He's been massive for this team. Blue Jays weren't done, though. They even it up. They score two in the bottom of the fifth, but the Mariners, they return the favor in the sixth inning, and guess who once again?
There's the pitch. Swing, and this is cranked to right field. Has some zip, has some giddy up. Pilar looks up, and there it goes. It rattles around by the bullpen. It's a home run. It bounces back into the grass in right field. Logan Morrison, his second home run of the day, and he gives the Mariners the lead right back. It's 5-4 Mariners as we start things off at the sixth with a bang.
Yeah, Lomo, big day. 2-for-4, 4 ribbies, 2 homers, 2 runs scored. He was the engine to the offense, playing left field, playing first base, doing it all for the Mariners. 2 jacks, and then Mike Zunino, he got a hold of one, and when he gets a hold of one, it goes.
The 3-0 swing, and this is hammered down the left field line. This has a chance, and it's gone. Mike Zunino absolutely clobbers his 22nd home run of the season, and it is batting practice all of a sudden today at Rogers Center. The Mariners have homered 3 times and twice now in the sixth.
And then Kyle Seager, for good measure, added a little bit.
The offering on the way to Seager. He swings and barrels it up to right field. It drops in there for a base hit, and it bangs off the wall. Jones pounds the bag at third. He makes the turn, and he scores standing. Here's the throw to second, and Seager is out.
It doesn't matter. He got the run home, and again, 96 RBIs in the campaign. Awfully impressive. He's got a shot to get to 100. Mariners would love that, certainly. Bullpen, Johnny Allstaff day, a lot of different pitchers getting involved, ran into some trouble between Bimal and Medina, but you know, after that, Farquhar goes 2 and just breezes on 19 pitches. Furbush gets a couple outs, and Carson Smith. Do I need to add any more to that, or can I just say the words Carson Smith?
The 0-2 pitch, slider, strike 3 called. He strikes out Mayberry looking on 3 straight pitches, and that's it for the Blue Jays. Carson Smith, you're unbelievable, kid. What a pitch.
Yeah, there you go. That's your 3-pitch outing right there. And a K. He has been unreal. His stuff is electric and so much fun to watch. Dominating. Rodney comes on, gives up a home run, but he had plenty of wiggle room to work with, and he would eventually end this one.
The 1-2 and a swing and a miss. Strike 3. Down goes Pompey. And that's it. The Mariners win it 7-5. Fernando shoots that arrow back home to Seattle, and he picks up his 47th save this year. I think he shot it to the top of the CN Tower. The Mariners put an end to the 5-game losing streak.
Oh, they needed that one in the worst way. 7-5. Mariners get the win, as you heard Rick say, snapped the 5-game losing streak. And after the ball game, here's what Lloyd McClendon had to say about this one.
We're still in the ring, still fighting. So,
Logan Morrison, he's had a couple of big – he hasn't had many big hits on this trip, but he's had a few of them.
Yeah, he came up real big for us today when we needed the most. And our bullpen, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you our bullpen did a nice job for us as well. It was a pretty good day all the way around.
like a catcher having to catch that many pitchers, having to be prepared for that many catchers.
Well, I mean, he knows them, you know. He did a nice job with the game plan today, and he had a big home run for us as well. So,
offensively, you guys were kind of in the same boat, having to see their bullpen almost a different pitcher every at bat.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one. It's that time of year, you know. So it didn't surprise me when they said they were using their bullpen. Just the way it is. You know, you adjust and you do the best you can do.
What happened? Just a thought. I mean, you break the five-game skid. You're going home now, and no matter what happens elsewhere tonight, you wake up tomorrow still alive.
Yeah, it's a good feeling. I mean, you know, like I told you guys, a lot of teams that wish they were in our position. As dire as it may look, the teams that wish they were in the Seattle Mariners' shoes right now. So we're still in it, and we're going to play hard and see what happens.
And, of course, after the ballgame, Mariners done with day baseball, and all eyes turned to the Royals and White Sox. And it looked good for a while in that ballgame, but then Kansas City splurges late. They get a 6-3 victory over Chicago. And then attention turned to Texas and Oakland in a game that was so close throughout. Tight ball game, close ball game. Remember, Texas just swept aside Oakland. I want you to think about, and I talked about this a few minutes ago. I want you to think about this. I want you to put a percentage chance the Mariners can pull this off. And here's the scenario. Here's what we're looking at. You're looking at a tie. That's what you're trying to get. You're trying to force an extra game. So in that regard, the A's are looking at basically a magic number of 2. They have a magic number of 2. So if you want to get a tie, you've got one game to play with 6 games total. I mean, 3 for Seattle, 3 for Oakland. So there's 6 games total. From the Mariners' perspective, you have one game of those 6 to play with. So that means that if you sweep aside the Angels, that means the A's have to win the series. They have to win 2 of 3. If you lose a game, it really puts you in a hole, because then you have all your eggs in the Texas basket to try and get it done. So essentially one game to play with. Oakland, a magic number of 2. Any combination of Mariners losses and Oakland wins, and that's where it's at. Mariners 2 games back right now, the A's, with 3 to play. So that's the scenario. So think about the percentage chance you give the Mariners to pull this off. Just have it in your head. Have it sitting there. Here's what happened last night in the ball game against the Texas Rangers. A's, Rangers, first game of their series. Here's how it unfolded.
Reddick in right is playing Beltre to pull. Left field fold is deep and straight up. And now here's the pitch, the 0-1 to Beltre. Swung on, hit to deep right. Reddick is back, right to the track, and leaping at the wall, and it is gone. And that quickly, this one is over. And the A's lose another tough one in a string of tough ones in the second half of 2014. It just keeps happening to the A's. Adrian Beltre goes the other way. A leaping try at the wall and right by Reddick. Beltre gets it out, and the Texas Rangers have won 12 of their last 13 games. And the A's haven't clinched the postseason yet, and they still have some work to do. The magic number stays at 2. And the Rangers have won it on Beltre's drive to right field, 2-1 in favor of Texas.
So Greg Kenkorak there on Oakland A's radio. And so after you listen to that, does that increase the odds in your mind? Give you a little more flicker of hope? I mean, that dials out the A's scenario, I think, pretty well. This is a team now, they've lost 3 ball games in a row. They're 3-7 in their past 10. Really struggling and having heartbreaking losses like that. And when you map it out, could they drop 3 more in a row? Could they lose the series? I don't know. I mean, does that audio change your mind? Did that earn a couple more percentage points in the Mariners' favor? I'd like to get your thoughts on that, too. Tweet me at Gary Hill Jr. or GaryHillPXP@gmail.com. I'd really like to hear if that just added a little flicker of hope. Here's what it looks like this weekend, too. So let's map it out. The next time we talk, we're going to know one way or another. Next podcast is going to be on Monday. So one way or another, we're going to know. Oakland at Texas. Kazmir against Tepish tomorrow. Kazmir, of course, has really struggled as of late. Had good stuff last time out. I mean, struck out a ton, but he got whacked around the yard by the Rangers. Then Samardzija against Holland on Saturday. Samardzija's been on fire, but so is Holland. So that matchup could go either way on Saturday. Then on Sunday, Gray against Martinez, and Martinez was excellent his last time out. So those are those pitching matchups between the A's and the Texas Rangers. So what about the M's? Weaver against Iwakuma tonight, 7:10 first pitch. He really should be at Safeco Field. They're still alive. They're alive in the last series of the season. I know the odds are long, but they're alive in the last series of the season. Iwakuma against Weaver tonight. Game two of the series between the Mariners and Angels. Rasmus against Paxton. You'd have to think Paxton is going to bounce back in that one. And then the finale, C.J. Wilson against the King, Felix Hernandez. And it's hard to say how the Angels are going to play this one, of course, with the division secured. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. At this point, you can really just take it a day at a time. I mean, we'll see what happens. There's only one game to play with six to go, but they're still alive going into tonight, so we'll see what happens. Hope you join us either at Safeco Field or on the air, 6 o'clock for the pregame show. So, a couple of things I want to get to here. One, it kind of blew me away. John Gibbons, and by the way, if they do end up tying it, Taiwan Walker is the one scheduled to pitch. And given how he pitched against Toronto, that's got to make you smile. And related to that, their skipper, John Gibbons, wait till you hear what he's got to say about seeing Taiwan Walker throw.
Gibby, last night here in Toronto, Taiwan Walker pitched the biggest game of his life and the best game of his life. From the Blue Jays dugout, what did you make of Taiwan Walker?
Wow, you know, he was very impressive. You know, I'd never seen a pitch before, but you hear around baseball, I mean, he's one of the top guys, you know, top up-and-coming prospects. Anybody that wanted to make a deal with the Mariners, he had to be in it, that kind of guy. And you can see why. I mean, he was really dominating. You know, I mean, a totally different style than our guy Burley, but they were both very, very good last night. And we were fortunate enough to get the win. It's too bad a guy pitches that well and comes out with a loss. But, yeah, I mean, you could see in him having a nice, long major league career. And, you know, you put him with Felix Hernandez, Paxton, and those guys. The future's bright over there.
We know that he's got that electric fastball to touch 98 last night, but it seemed like last night that split changeup of his to all the left-handed bats that you put on the lineup card was really a devastating pitch. What'd you make of his changeup?
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't know it was that good. And that just shows you, I mean, for a young guy, he's ahead of the game. You know, a lot of times that takes, for big arms, it takes a while to get that. But, you know, he's got some pretty good guys over there. He's hanging around that have been around, been successful, and I'm sure he's picking up some things from them. But, yeah, that was very impressive. And, you know, realistically look at it, I mean, that's as good as games we've seen pitched against us all year. And we were fortunate enough to get the win.
Especially the guy with the pretty good changeup over on the Mariners side as well. Gibby, thanks so much for the time, as always.
My pleasure.
Yeah, pretty high compliments there from the skipper from the Toronto Blue Jays. Now we're going to hand things over to Shannon Dreher. She had a chance to actually catch up with Taiwan Walker. Here's their conversation.
Taiwan, well, we talked a couple of days ago, but it seems like one of those outings that are kind of an aha outing where everything absolutely comes together. And you had the added weight, I think, of obviously that was a big game for your team. You needed to go out there and be big. How did you deal with that aspect of it?
I just try to keep everything the same. Just try to go out there and just, you know, stay calm. Don't try to do too much because it's a big game. You know, sometimes you want to go out there and do more than what you can do, and that's where you get in trouble. So I just try to keep everything the same and, you know, just try to stick to the game plan.
Was there a butterfly at all?
Before the game, I was like, oh man, okay. I was nervous. But, after the first pitch, everything just went away and kind of just locked in.
Some of your best stuff was a changeup, and it looked like that was the most you've thrown it in a big league game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, we used the changeup a lot, and, you know, it was working, too. So, we used it a lot. You know, it worked perfect off my fastball, and, I mean, they had seven lefties. So, you know, we threw it and got ground balls with it, got swings and misses, strikeouts. So, I mean, it was working really good for us.
And it's a different changeup. It's something that you've been working on. How did that evolve, and when did you know, okay, this is the one, this is the grip, this is...
Yeah, it was the end of last year. You know, I threw it and it was pretty good. You know, I felt pretty confident with it. But then I got to the season and, I threw it in my bullpen. I think my first bullpen, I threw it in and it felt really good. And, you know, I kind of just knew. I was like, okay, well, this is going to be my pitch this year because it just felt so good. And I just went with it and rolled with it.
And it's a little bit of a unique grip. Yeah. And why does that work so well for you?
Just because I can throw it like my fastball. Okay. You know, I don't have to do anything special with it. I just grip it and just let the grip do all the work and then just throw it.
And we talked a little bit about this. Get your fist bump from McNamara there. Good job, Mac. Nice. All right. we talked a little bit about the velocity of it the other day. And we're seeing this more and more in baseball. I think Felix was the first one to really kind of get away with the firmer changeup, and now people are actually teaching that.
I mean, his unbelievable movement on his changeup. So having that, you know, it could be hard because it moves so much.
Right.
So, and I know another guy, Strasburg, same thing. You know, 90 mile per hour changeup, but it moves so much, so you can get away with it.
Mm-hmm. So when you first saw that movement, what did you think? I mean, you're messing with it, and you're like, okay, wait a second.
I'm like, okay, well, you know, now figure out how to control it, figure out how to throw it, and it should be good. So.
Okay, we didn't see as much with the cutter, and that's a pitch that I know that you were relying on quite a bit last year.
Yeah, I mean, last year it was one of my go-to pitches, but I didn't want to throw it too much because coming with the shoulder and everything, so I didn't want to put too much stress on my elbow or anything like that. So I kind of backed off it, and then, that's where I started throwing the changeup more, and, because I knew I needed a third pitch. And, everyone's telling me, you know, get a changeup. Changeup's going to be a really good pitch for you. And so I just went with the changeup instead of the cutter, and it's been working.
And what did you learn yesterday from pace of game? I mean, you said you wanted to go after them, make them uncomfortable, and it looked like that really paid off, that you were able to just get the ball and go.
Yeah, I mean, got it, go. We were just, you know, going. We're on this, me and Z were on the same page. You know, we're locked in, working the fastball in and out, you know, getting them off the plate when we needed to. And, we just mixed. We mix everything, and you know, everything worked out.
It's got to be hard to put the ball down after all that.
It definitely is. Yeah, I mean, I want to pitch again. I'm like, okay, well, you know, let's go, boys. You know, I want to keep pitching. So,
there's Taijuan Walker, Shannon Dreyer, and Lomo he continues to hit one big homer after another, and he hit two of them yesterday. And his backstory is pretty interesting. When he was a kid, got some help from a name that a lot of you probably know, former player, very good hitter in his own right, and a major league hitting coach. Here's Aaron Goldsmith with longtime Royal and great hitter in his own right, Kevin Seitzer.
Kevin, you and Logan Morrison seem to have a pretty special relationship. He's referenced a number of times over the course of this season how much you have helped him. Where did that relationship begin?
Well, in Kansas City, Mike McFarland and I have a indoor baseball academy. It's called Mac and Sights, and we've been doing it since 1996 when we were finishing our playing days and wanted to do some lessons and camps and things like that. Just love the game, love kids, and really wanted to give back and pour into them. And you know, one day little 11 12 year old kid with his dad come walking in and started asking me, grilling me questions about my hitting philosophy and what I taught and this and that. And it was Logue and his dad, Tom. And they, that started a relationship that lasted all the way into college and even continued a little bit when he was in pro ball. So, he and I, we go way back, and I love him like my own son and just very, very happy for him to get to the big leagues.
What's it like for you now to see him in the major leagues?
It's kind of like a proud father. You pour into these kids when they're younger, and then you see them develop, you see them grow, and And, you know, to get the opportunity to play in the big leagues for anybody is a chance of a lifetime. And to see it fulfilled for him and to have success and do well and be able to stay and be an everyday player, it's very gratifying, very rewarding. So couldn't be happier for him.
Kevin, you had an all-star career and you played a lot against the Mariners over the course of your time in the major leagues. You had a 4-for-4 game against the Mariners as a member of the Royals in 1997. You had a 2-home-run performance in the Kingdome in 96 with Milwaukee. That Mariners lineup had Griffey, Edgar, Buehner, Dan Wilson, A-Rod. What are your memories of playing in the Kingdome against those mid to late 90s Mariners clubs?
Well, they were always great teams. I mean, they had a very dangerous offense and they had great pitching staff. And probably my worst memories were facing Randy Johnson. You know, it was just always a rough day at work whenever he was on the mound. And honestly, I don't even remember a 4-for-4 game or a 2-home-run game. All I remember is a lot of bad at-bats against Randy.
When you had that 2-home-run game against the Mariners in the Kingdome, you were playing with the Brewers, and the catcher that day for Milwaukee was Mike Matheny, now the manager for the Cardinals. Could you tell at that point that there was something special about Matheny and that one day he might go on to be a big league skipper?
Yeah, there was always something about Mike when he first came up. I remember he was an extra catcher that was brought into big league camp one spring and, you know, wasn't going to make the team. And we ended up having a catcher get injured right at the end of camp. And, you know, we'd had a bench clearing brawl that started in a spring training game that the hitter never got off the dirt because Matheny tackled him, had him hogtied in a headlock, and Phil Garner fell in love with him from that moment on. And he ended up making the club with us. And when he didn't know how long he was going to be there because the catcher's injury, you know, was only going to be a couple of weeks, he didn't know whether to get a place, apartment. So long and the short of it, I ended up taking him in. And he stayed at my place because my family was still back in Kansas City till school was out. So he stayed with me, ended up staying longer in the big leagues. He may even have been there the whole year, matter of fact. I don't even remember what year it was. But he stayed with me for the first couple months of the season until my family came and joined me. And we got very, very close. And I got to spend a lot of time with him. And I knew then there was something special about the kid. And then watching his career unfold, the way he handled a pitching staff, his work ethic, very, very sharp kid. And yeah, I'm happy for him as well.
Finally, Kevin, when you were with the Royals, you played with one of the all-time greats in George Brett and also somebody whose career was cut just way too short in Bo Jackson. Any memories that stand out about either one of those guys?
Yeah, I mean, playing with George, you know, probably the best hitter that I ever played with or ever saw. I mean, he was just a professional hitter, a great teammate, a great leader on the field, and, you know, just played the game the right way. And just watching him, being able to play with him for 5 years and watching him on a daily basis was pretty special. And then as far as Bo goes, it was, you know, probably the best athlete that I've ever seen on a baseball field. It was one of those things. He was so raw as a baseball talent, but every day you came to the park, you had a chance to see something you'd never seen before on a field. And I can't tell you how many times it happened, whether it was diving plays or throws or home runs or just running the bases. I mean, it was one of the most electric talents that you've ever seen.
Kevin, really do appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
All right, you're welcome.
All right, there it is. That's going to do it. We'll talk Monday. We'll either be wrapping things up or we'll be talking about a one-gamer. A one-game to get into a one-game. How about that? I don't know. It'd be crazy, but, you know, as long as you're still alive, it could happen. So it should be fun tonight, no matter what. So have a great weekend. Enjoy Mariners baseball, and we'll talk to you on Monday. So long.